Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
If you dig into the numbers, I just don't see how $20 and $25 million purses and $5 million paydays, I just don't see how that is sustainable when the tournament's just not that compelling. Who's going to be watching?
I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about.
Hello, this is Alan Shipnuck back for another Fire Drill podcast. We have Michael Bamberger coming in hot from Ponte Vedra Beach, the final round of the players. I just read your story, Michael, which is going to populate on firepitcollective.com any second now. I love the way you talked about Scotty Scheffler as a throwback, the way he moves, the way he plays, the way he carries himself. You know, it's been almost a year now since his Masters win, and we're still getting to know Scheffler. But you seem to have some affection for the guy. What do you think about his performance today and his place in the game right now?
I like your use of the phrase, we seem to be getting to know Scheffler, as if there is a Scheffler that one can get to know. In other words, I don't have the sense that he's a very complicated person. I do have the sense that he's a very intelligent person, but not someone who makes things more complicated than they are. But like early on, before we even like heard him in press conferences, we thought, oh, this guy's a dullard. He's not a dullard at all. He's a thoughtful, he just seems like a thoughtful, kind, considerate person who's outstanding at golf and doesn't care that his swing is, you know, not textbook. For whatever reason, he doesn't inspire you with awe like a Rory or a Dustin Johnson or a John Rahm. Like, definitely a level below that, just in terms of how he goes about his business and the shots that he plays. But how can you argue with a Masters contending all the time, now a Players and 6 wins in 13 months?
Yeah, incredible. And if, you know, to me, it was really the Ryder Cup was when that was the breakthrough. Watching him, you know, John Rahm was playing some of the best golf in the history of mankind that week, and Scheffler took him down in singles, and that was to me the beginning of the ascent. So yeah, I mean, he's been doing it now for a year and a half straight, and 5 birdies with the Players, 5 birdies in a row with the Players Championship hanging in the balance. I mean, that's pretty spectacular. And what was the feeling like there at the stadium courts?
Just my personal feeling is, if you see him over a 6-footer and we're playing make or miss, I find myself saying miss more than make. They go in 100%. When he wins, they go in 100% of the time. They don't go in, you know, as you have observed, Alan, of Tiger. Like, Tiger would be annoyed if they didn't go in the right part of the hole. This guy seems to be happy if it goes in any part of the hole. It's just not beautiful, but it's great. And I am definitely, I'm just trying to speak honestly about him, but I'm definitely in the fan camp. I root for this guy. I love the fact that he doesn't talk about money. He doesn't, you know, Rory's got a role in this game right now. And the subtext of that role is hard for a lot of people to swallow when you get right down to it, which is the elite golfers have to get paid more money. Now, I don't know how Scotty Scheffler, as an elite player, couldn't think that, but he's the beneficiary of Rory's conversation and Phil's outbursts and Saudi billions and all the rest, but he's sort of either risen above it or is floating aside it. I'm not sure how you would describe it, but it's just not a central part of his character, and it's very winning. What do you think, Alan?
Yeah, or he just won $4.6 million, and any normal human being would be like, this is an incredible amount of money. I am so stoked. Like, right. I don't need to ask for more. I don't need to throw a fit. Like, I'm so happy. I think to your point, he's kind of a normal guy. It's like, he must be in disbelief the amount of money he's won in 13 months, tens of millions of dollars.
I think what you just said, Alan, just speaks to a normal value system. You know, how much does any person need? And, you know, of course, part of his thing for us, you know, he's 26. And he hasn't been around very long. So it's not like, oh, we've been seeing this guy for years. Like, Rory's young, but he has been around for a long time. But he really, truly seems like he's well into his mid-30s. Alan, did you happen to notice the comparison to Steve Jones?
I loved that. Yeah, in Michael's story, he talked about how Scheffler moves and looks like Steve Jones and has the same no-nonsense. Because the 96 U.S. Open, Oakland Hills, was my second ever U.S. Open. And
oh, wow. Was that 96?
Yeah. Yeah, it's burned into my brain. And I had honestly never even heard of Steve Jones going into that week. You know, he'd had that finger injury and he'd kind of fallen off. And I was so impressed by the guy. He just seemed, as you're saying, he just seemed like a regular dude who was really, really good at golf. And that was the U.S. Open. Everyone came apart. You know, Davis Love three-putted the second hole, and Tom Lehman messed up the last hole. And Jones just played golf and got it done. And I think it's a fabulous comparison. There is a similarity there. I mean, Steve Jones,
that broad-shouldered lankiness, and you know, Steve. What was Steve's thing later? Did he fall off of a motorbike or something, and never was really quite the same after that? But that he was a super talent.
Well, no, that predated it, and he had to learn to play golf again. Yeah, but that was for a guy like Steve Jones, winning the U.S. Open was the pinnacle. And I think at that point he was content. But I think Scottie Scheffler, you can't get to number one in the world without having like a deep reservoir of ambition. But you know, John Rahm obsesses about being number one, and it meant a lot to Dustin. You know, he was very prideful about it, and you know, Tiger and those guys. Like, I don't think Scottie Scheffler cares about that stuff so much. He just wants to hit golf shots and get the ball in the hole as fast as possible. And if you do that at the level he's doing it, everything comes your way: the money, the world ranking points, the fame, the glory. But if you focus on those things, it's easy to lose your way. So he seems to have just the absolute perfect disposition. Like, I'm just going to play golf, and whatever comes my way, I'm going to enjoy. So it's impressive.
Yeah. That obsessive interest with becoming number one, it's insane. Because it means that you're putting so much faith in the architects of the system in the first place, putting more faith in them than you are what you've achieved. What's fun right now is you can argue John Rahm, you can argue Scottie Scheffler. If you cared to, you can argue Rory or somebody else. But that's part of the fun of being a sports fan. I don't need a computer-driven logarithmic explanation of who number one is. I'll decide for myself.
Yeah, it's all about math, and they change it every couple of years. So it is funny when people obsess about it. Like, you're literally, these guys couldn't even pass algebra in high school, and now all they care about is a math equation. It makes no sense at all. But
have you ever heard a real number about what a guy gets contractually, what it might mean to him to become the number one player for a week, and then, you know, I'm sure beyond that, the more weeks you have that, the more money you're going to make.
It's a real bonus in a lot of contracts, and it can be $500,000. It can be $1 million. I mean, it's not inconsequential, but again, if you're getting to world number one, you're winning so many tournaments and making so much money. I don't think that bonus is going to change your life. But to the point about number one, it's quite an interesting debate because, you know, Rory's been playing at an incredibly high level. John Rahm has been on a tear, but if you're going to really debate who's number one, to me, it comes down to Cam Smith and Scottie Scheffler, because they've each have won the crown jewel of the sport in the last 12 months, a green jacket and an old course at the Open, They've also, each is one of players. And obviously we haven't seen a lot of Smith, but he went down to Australia in December. He won down there. Like, so it's funny that there's been so much focus on Rahm and Rory, but I think they're looking at the wrong guys. I mean, if I had to pick one dude to go out and win a tournament right now to save my life, it's probably gonna be Scottie Scheffler. And number two is probably Cam Smith, depending on the setup, even though I love Rory and I love Rahm's game, but the other two guys are just getting it done when it matters most more recently. So, but it's quite a conversation because you have four strong candidates.
It's neat. I'm right there with you. And I would probably, as you say, it would really depend on the course, but I would say this, the trickier and shorter the course, the more I'm going down the Cam Smith road. And for a Masters pick, if you could only choose between those two, this is wacky for me to say, but I would go with Cam Smith. I mean, when you can chip and pitch and putt like he can, hits it plenty far enough. It would be amazing for anybody who's writing a book about LIV Golf if Cam Smith should win the Masters. I can't say I'm rooting for it because, you know, as you know, Alan, as we've discussed many times, really a traditionalist at heart. But I don't know that Cam Smith in full, you know, and I saw it up close at the Old Course and last year at the Players. It's one of the best you'll ever see. It's a little wild at driving at times, but for getting in the hole, it's at the Alathable Seve level.
Yeah, so a few people have made the Tom Watson comparison, which I like as well.
And, yeah. But how about for you, Alan? If you could, leaving aside your book interest, if your only choice was Scheffler or Smith, which of those two golfers would you pick to win the Masters?
Well, if the course is really firm and fast, it's Smith every time. If they get the, you know, the early week showers, which seems to factor in a lot of Masters, and it just takes a little fire out, I would go Scheffler. But Scheffler still has a genius for scoring. I mean, he just has a knack for pulling off the shot when you need to. And yeah, I mean, you could see it today during the final round. There's sluggers, and you watch them hit the ball, and it's awe-inspiring. And they shoot 71. And then there's a guy like Scottie Scheffler whose footwork's all over the place, who the club's flying in weird, but he plays shots and he gets the ball in the hole really fast. And I don't think, you know, if you put Scottie Scheffler on the range at a Korn Ferry event, people would think he's probably 100th on the money list. You know, he is not, as you said, it's not beautiful, but he just knows how to score and he knows how to do it when it matters. And Cam Smith's the same way. I mean, that's a certain level of genius. And I'm not sure even Rory has that. You know, he can overpower a golf course, but you know, I walked every hole with him at the Old Course on Sunday, and that was all about scoring. You know, you're going to drive it near the green on half the par fours at least, and he couldn't get it up and down, and Cam Smith could, and that was really the difference. I mean, there's just, you know, Jordan Spieth, when he's playing well, he's got that. There's a magic to the scoring that is hard to quantify, even with shot link. And Scottie Scheffler has it. It's just really fun to watch.
Alan, may I pose a question to you apropos of the evening?
Yes.
Why are there so few good golf movies, and one might say there are none?
Yeah, it is Academy Awards night. You may hear some shouting in the background. That's my daughters watching, and they're very invested in who wins and loses some of these categories, which is cute. It's just, part of it is because it's such a highly specific skill, and no actor can master it, right? Like, I don't know. It lacks that verisimilitude, right? And what's compelling about golf is the inner game, which is hard to capture. And it's that sense of when a big moment and it's dead quiet and the whole world's watching, and the battle is so internal. And you know, the sports movies that work, they're funny, like Bull Durham, or there's a lot of, they're heavy, like Raging Bull, or I don't know. I don't think golf has those notes that well. I mean, Tin Cup worked it's sort of just like comedy that the golf was a vehicle for. I guess it's a golf movie, but I don't take the golf seriously. I mean, because no one's going to do that in the last hole of the U.S. Open. You're going to lay it up and you're going to try and win the tournament. But anyway, I don't know the answer. What's your thinking on that, Michael?
I mean, even though I cite Caddyshack all the time and I know the movie well, I really think it's so bad it's good. It's in that category, as our friend and colleague Gary Vincent used to say, it's so bad it's good. It really is so bad that it's good. But short of Caddyshack, and there are some clever moments in Caddyshack, you know, it is a thing unto itself. Aside from Caddyshack, there's really not one golf movie that I've even bothered to watch more than a second time. You know, Tommy's Honor tried so hard, but was so earnest. Tin Cup was all over the lot. Let's not even talk about that, if we may say the name, that Will Smith dripping molasses thing. What was that called? The Legend of Bagger Vance, the Hogan movie.
You know, don't say the name.
From the 50s, it's heinous, with John Ford. If that's his name. Did you ever see, Alan? And I know this hits close to home for us. I never saw it. There is a movie version of Golf in the Kingdom. Are you familiar with it? Have you seen it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was filmed at Bandon Dunes in the early, when right. Bandon had was raw basically. And, I have watched it. It's kind of a mess not in a terrible way, because the book is like that as well. I mean, the second half of the book, especially, it's worth watching, and you should probably microdose mushrooms while you do it. It's just, it's metaphysical and kind of trippy, but it's worthwhile. I don't know. I think the actual drama of golf is so compelling. Like, if you watched our 5 episodes of The Grind, which you can find on the Fire Pit YouTube or on our homepage, like, that human drama is so compelling. If you follow, you know, some of these stories of these guys, they're playing for their livelihood. It's such raw human emotion. And so it doesn't quite translate to the screen. I don't, because those stakes are stripped away. I don't know, because it is a mystery in that movies can reproduce all walks of life. I mean, and they can make you care about professions that you're never going to experience or interact with. And so they should be able to do it with golf. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we're too close to it. Maybe the average viewer enjoys some of the movies that drive us crazy. Well, I love a good movie discussion, but let's just talk about the early week drama. The Academy Award for Best Actor in a press conference goes to Jay Monahan, who did his annual State of the Union press conference on Wednesday and said, everything's hunky-dory, we're doing great, nothing to see here. It's been funny to chart his, last year at the Players, it was like, we're about legacy, not leverage, we're moving on. Well, that didn't quite work out. And now there's been a whole year of LIV Golf, or half a year anyway, and Monahan came in and talked about the state of things. You were there, Michael. What was your take on Monahan's performance? And then the related news about, you know, how the tour is reshaping itself. We talked already about, the cuts or the no cuts, but in a previous podcast, but just the feeling on the ground at Sawgrass as this is, you know, Players Championship has become an important week for charting the course of the PGA Tour. What were your thoughts on that?
As we have seen at the Masters and in the US Open, especially to some degree, the British Open, these pre-tournament press conferences from the men and one woman who have such important positions in the game are really important for setting the tone for the game. I don't know if they should be or not, but they're very much directed to people like us. And can you win over the constituency? And if you think about where Jay was in 2020 versus 22 and 23, you know, 20 is dealing with the uncertainty of the pandemic washing ashore. And 22, it was, you know, fisticuffs and we'll show you. And in 23, he was really very confident, very informed. And he gave you the feeling that this PGA Tour is going to carry on. So you know, to use the word you used, Alan, I think it's an appropriate one, as a performance, it was very effective. If you dig into the numbers, I just don't see how $20 and $25 million purses and $5 million paydays, I just don't see how that is sustainable when you have weeks like this week's when the tournament's just not that compelling. Who's going to be watching? I don't know. I don't know where, you know, he bought a year very cleverly. He took up, he really did take part of Phil Mickelson's playbook and made it the tours when it's all said and done. But they're so focused on these elite players at the expense of the journeyman, and I think at the expense of the fan. I'm not at all a financial analyst type person. I'm not good at that at all. But I just don't see how this is sustainable. How about you, Alan? You've delved much deeper into the numbers of where golf is right now. What's your sense of, just as a numbers game, is what Jay Monahan is preaching, is it sustainable?
Well, and I'll add to that. Today, Aramco released its earnings, and it had made a record amount of money. I think it was $141 billion in the last quarter. I can't remember the number. It was an astronomical number. And of course, that's what feeds into the Saudi Public Investment Fund, and that's what's floating LIV Golf. So when people talk about, you know, LIV having unlimited resources, it's basically true. In the PGA Tour, it's much more finite. And, you know, I did a story a few days ago where I got a tournament director on the phone of a non-elevated event, and he opened a vein and was speaking for a lot of his colleagues. It's a real challenge to get corporations to sign up for these non-elevated events because they're not getting the eyeballs, they're not getting the players, the price is only going up. And, you know, as a Silicon Valley bank collapses and that throws the whole tech world into question, like they just lost Dell Computers, how are you going to keep finding a company to put in $15-18 million for a regular event and 25-28 for an elevated? It's a tough sell. I think there's going to have to be some contraction of the schedule. And then that reduces playing opportunities for the journeyman. There's going to be some tough decisions ahead for the PGA Tour's organization. You know, whether that means the senior tour, maybe that means Latino America or China or Canada. But if the entire institutional focus is on the top players, then everyone else is going to feel some pain. And so I think, you know, it's been a fun first 3 months of the season. I mean, elevated events have definitely added some energy to the whole thing. And it's not only has it been a talking point, but it's been some great golf. And we are all enjoying seeing the top players together. But the long term is very much in question. And, you know, the center has held for 23. We're going to find out more about who re-ups or doesn't in 24 and 25. And that's going to have a huge effect on the future of the PGA Tour. And if there is a lot of attrition among the sponsors, then finding middle ground with LIV becomes a lot more attractive, because if you could keep this energy with all these players and you could have someone else pay for it, that would be the dream, right? So, you know, I like this idea of letting the LIV players back on the PGA Tour, but they have to play the non-elevated events. Like, that'd be great for everybody. You get all the stars that if they want to play a half dozen times and try and play their way into some bigger events. I don't know. There's various people, whether it's Rory or Rom or whoever, have talked about the need to find a compromise. And as the financials play out and as sponsors leave the PGA Tour, that's going to add more pressure to the whole thing. So the last chapter has not been written in my book or this long saga. It's I don't think we're going to know for a while what it all means. You know, I think Jay Monahan definitely did what he had to do, and he had that sound of confidence in his voice. But I'm not sure how much of that was acting and how much that was legit.
Well, Alan, before we click off here, you're off to Tucson, Arizona for the first event in the United States this year. What are your expectations for it? Are we sort of at a moment of business as usual, or is there never anything usual with LIV Golf?
No, I think so. You know, last year was just this chaotic, just trying to build the organization while conducting tournaments. Now the whole model's baked out. The teams are set. The players are set. There's going to be no new players are going to be added, and no, there's going to be no attrition. I mean, barring injury. And even then they have a few guys on standby to fill in, like an Andy Ogletree or a Laurie Cantor. So I think it's going to be almost boring in that it's going to look and feel very much like the Mayakoba event did. Team uniforms, that was fun and fresh the first time. Now it's going to be okay. You know, I think, again, to quote Jay Monahan, it's product against product. So this will, you know, we're going to see what the level of play is on a course that has a long history of the PGA Tour. Of course, the match play was out there at that venue in Tucson. And it's the biggest question around LIV Golf. Can it actually generate interest just in the golf? It's been living on buzz and hype and intrigue and drama this whole time. At some point, the golf has to take center stage. And, you know, if you get Phil wins, if you get a Brooks Dustin shootout, you know, if Cam Smith goes 30 under, then I think people will pay attention. If Charles Howell, you know, kind of cruises to victory, it's going to be hard to draw the eyeballs. So, you know, it's funny how everyone cooks the books, what the ratings were, how many people actually tuned in on the CW and on the app and all that. The numbers that LIV put out were pretty robust. What some other folks cited were significantly smaller. So we need more of a sample size. And I think, you know, if they can draw a good crowd electronically, that would be a huge step forward and try and create some viewing habits. By now, everyone knows about where they can watch LIV, not only on the CW, but they've launched their own platform for streaming. And so I think it's going to feel like a golf tournament. I don't think it's going to feel like a sideshow. That's good or bad, depending on your perspective, because LIV has kind of needed the sideshow. But I'm looking forward to seeing it and continuing just to report on what's going on out there. But I guess my expectations are low from an intrigue standpoint. And from a competitive standpoint, we'll see. Okay, well, it's very late in Ponte Vedra Beach, where Michael Bamberger has already typed a story and done a podcast. The guy is tireless. We're going to let Michael get some rest. But always a fun conversation, these Sunday night fire drills. We'll keep them coming. Augusta National is only 3 or 4 weeks away, so it's time to get excited about that. I was already excited, but you know, the players really is a benchmark. So I think we have an idea of who the favorites are heading to Augusta, even though we already had a hunch. But as always, thanks for listening. We appreciate your fidelity. That was Michael Bamberger. This is Alan Shipnuck signing off from this fire drill, and we'll do it again next week. Thanks.
I bet big and I played to win. Made a fortune when my ship came in. I ran the table, never thought I could fall. Then the wintertime hit me like a cannonball. Now I can't shake this losing streak. Every road I take is a dead end street. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you did it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel... It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.